It's Berlin Briefing Time. I'm Richard Walker, and how's about this for a party programme? 75% tax on the rich, shutting down NATO and open borders to immigration. That's a taste of the left party's agenda here in Germany. And while the far-right AfD has been getting all the attention around the world, this party on the far left is proving that socialism is alive and kicking in German politics. In fact, it's the number one party among first-time voters. So today on Berlin Briefing, we're going to find out why that is. Then we're going to track the party's fascinating journey from East German communism to Gen Z today. And finally, we'll find out how an accident of history could have just given the left party the key to Germany's political future. So I'm here with Bernd Riegert and Matthew Moore, both colleagues from DW Boys Club today. But since Michaela, Nina and Julia are away, we have none of them with us. But of course, both of you have spent a lot of time with the left party recently, so it is great to have you here. So let's get started. I want to get started with you, Matt, because you just came back recently from the big party congress that the party was holding, and they were celebrating because they did really well, surprisingly well, in this most recent election. And you spoke to one of the party leaders, and we have one really short snippet from her, Ina Schwertner, about her goal for the party that really stuck out to me from your conversation. So we're just going to listen to that just for one sec.
To be the workers' party and not to let, you know, workers go to the far right.
Super short. Their goal is to be the workers' party and not to let workers go to the far right. So that's their mission, Matt. And for that, they've got a program that is very much to the far left, the opposite end of the political spectrum.
That was very much a kind of recurring theme throughout the party congress, was this idea that they can not just really mobilize the working class again, but also that they could be a bulwark against the AfD, the far-right AfD, and also they think and they believe that they can actually start to appeal to some of the people that have voted for the AfD in recent years, so working class people in Germany.
Yeah.
So that's quite interesting, actually.
Yeah, so let's go through a few of their programme points, because it's really a really striking political programme. And let's start off with the economy. Bernd, reading through the programme as we've been doing over the last couple of days, there's a lot of really standout kind of left-wing taxation policies. What stood out to you?
Well, it's very radical if you put it to a contest with the other parties. They want to tax the rich and give it to the poor. It's a Robin Hood approach, actually. During the campaign, one of the leading figures, Jan van Aken, said, we want to abolish billionaires in Germany altogether.
So, yeah. So let me stop you there. We can actually listen to that. Yeah. So we've got a soundbite from Jan van Aken, one of the party leaders, who was addressing the audience, and he says that this is a shtick that he has. He often says this, that there should be no billionaires. And listen to the audience reaction after he says that at the beginning, and then we'll come back.
Es sollte keine Milliardäre geben. Ist so. Ja, es sollte keine Milliardäre geben. Das ist doch völlig absurd.
Yeah, so he's saying, just as a point of principle, he says it's completely absurd that there are billionaires.
He's arguing that these people cannot spend that money in their lifetime, and also when they inherit it to their children, it doesn't have any good for the society. So he says the nationalization of this wealth is necessary, and then they would have the money to pay all the things they want to pay. More social welfare, more allowances for students, minimum wage that is far above the level of today. So lots of, I would say, socialist illusions that should be financed by this millionaires or abandoning of billionaires.
Yeah, I mean, and of course, I mean, it's not such an outrageous thing to think. You know, a lot of people say in the United States have a similar view that there's too much economic inequality. You know, you have people with hundreds of billions of dollars now, not just billions. Germany is also, if you look at the data, it's a strikingly unequal distribution of wealth in Germany. So, Matt, some of the specifics, the left party, I mean, this is a problem that a lot of parties acknowledge, but the left party just goes further. For instance, with a 75% tax rate on people earning, on earnings over €1 million per year.
Yeah, so that's like the big picture, the highest tax rate that they've proposed, but they also propose 60% on earnings over $250,000 a year or euros a year. Talking about a one-off wealth tax and an ongoing wealth tax, so 5% of fortunes and assets over 50 million. So a huge redistribution of wealth.
Yeah.
And I think that they're talking about having to kind of half the wealth of billionaires within a decade. So hugely kind of radical, as you say, taxation plans that make a lot of people balk in this country. But actually, you look at polls, and the public polling shows that they do believe that the richest in the country, the top 1%, should pay a bit more.
Yeah.
The question is what the Linke and the Left Party are proposing too far?
Yeah.
Yeah, and people don't take it that seriously. If you look at the polls, I think almost 70% of all voters say it's totally illusional what they're proposing is too radical. But on the other hand, they are appealing to a lot of young people who don't have a wealth yet. So they are still, you know, in the education, students and people like that. So, yeah, but it will never come to terms with the whole of the society. That's impossible.
And they're also... you know, they have pretty strong policies on rent controls, and this is also pointing to an issue that's been troubling for a lot of people in Germany. There's a real shortage of accommodation. Rents have been climbing higher and higher. So that is also something that is, you know, designed to appeal to people with lower incomes, particularly younger people.
Like this, you know, we talk about the tax the rich, and that was this T-shirt that Jan van Aken, the leader that we just heard from, he wore that throughout the campaign, and the party congress at the weekend, you know, they're selling them and they're like, these things sell like hotcakes. Everyone wants them. But actually, it's their proposals on rent control, which I think have most cut through with people, because these are the things that people are affected by across Germany. Germany is a country of renters. Rents have been rising a lot in recent years, especially with inflation, and their proposals are a nationwide rent cap, which is that you basically, rents don't go above a certain level according to the local rent rates. That's a policy that was introduced here in Berlin in recent years, but failed. But they say that it can be done on a nationwide level. And that has cut through. And people hear that and they think, gosh, yeah, this is a party that's finally talking about the issues I care about, not a party like the others in Germany that are talking about foreign policy issues like Ukraine war. You know, they feel that there's a kind of disconnect. And so they feel that this is a party that's dealing with the bread and butter issues.
Now, another area of policy where they're really distinctive is foreign policy. Yeah? So let's talk about that. So, as I mentioned in the intro, they're very much anti-NATO. They describe NATO within their party program as a provocative organization.
Yeah, that's true. Because the approach is we want peace by negotiations, not by arms. This is the overarching theme that also leads to the fact that they say Russia is actually wrong with attacking Ukraine, of course, but you don't deliver weapons to Ukraine because arms would only prolong the conflict. Jan van Aken, for example, is arguing we need more diplomacy, a diplomatic approach, maybe like that one that we see in these days. So it's a mix of a peace movement where the party actually comes from, and also a little bit of a realistic view on things. They despise everything that Donald Trump is doing in the US. They say his approach to dismantle international organizations is totally wrong. They want the opposite. They want more international cooperation. So it's an approach which is not fitting with the world today. Actually, it's also an illusion what they are thinking about.
And this idea of, you know, anti-NATO, also they talk about wanting to demilitarize, to disarm Germany. This is really the absolute kind of opposite of the current push within Germany, but also Europe more broadly, towards increasing military spending, largely because of fear of Vladimir Putin, and also fear that Donald Trump and the United States are not going to help Europe anymore to such a great extent with security. So they're very much a kind of a polar opposite of the current trend in German politics in terms of the military.
And also in the Bundestag now, they're the only voice that is offering a different perspective than the other parties. You know, in the Bundestag, that is. And
in the parliament,
because and that's the, I think that is a USP for them, right? Is that they can say, look, we are against this. It's out of control. They're spending on military, and it's only going to lead to more conflict. So they've got like policies to kind of nationalize arms companies and have them then shift their production to products that are no longer weapons and civilian products, as they would say.
So a real kind of fusion of kind of peace politics, but also left-wing industrial politics, or the idea of a heavy state involvement in the economy.
But to go back to Bernd's point, so very critical of NATO, They think NATO is basically just as a Cold War relic. They propose a kind of a new OSCE, Operation of Security and Economic Cooperation 2.0, including Russia and Turkey, yeah. Which is just unthinkable at this day, at this moment.
Yeah. Also, Israel is, and the war in Gaza has also been an important policy area for them, Bernd.
Yes, they say also here peace has to be reached without, using weapons and conflict. So they want both sides to go to the table and negotiate. There are discussions in the parties. The party has many wings and groups and fractions. One part of the Linke says, was tending more towards the Palestinians and saying Israel is doing wrong here. But on the other hand, there is also a very strong bloc that says the right of Israel to exist is not disputed by anybody. Mm-hmm. But the policies that the Netanyahu government is pursuing now are wrong. So they try to find a balance here. And they are not, I think, not so much focused on the Staatsraison thing. They don't say, they don't connect the German statehood with the Israeli statehood so much.
So Staatsraison, just to explain that, this is this idea that was first formulated by Angela Merkel, that Israel's security and its existence as a state is really a core commitment of the German state.
Yeah, that's true. But as I said, the left party is a little bit more vague on that. But the point is clear. They want Israel to exist, but they want also the Palestinians to have their own state or statehood. Mm-hmm. And they want to find a peaceful solution in this conflict. But they don't have a real solution how to reach that, actually.
But also on that, they're the one party that is very clear that they say that Benjamin Netanyahu should, if he was ever to land in Germany, should be arrested. Mm-hmm. You know, so they're very clear on that. And that, I think that's...
Because of the ICC arrest warrant.
Right. And I think that willingness to take a position on that, which is a very complex issue for Germany, was also something that helped them in the election campaign, because it was said it was a clear moral position, which other parties were kind of trying to kind of balance it out.
And polling does suggest the German public has been getting more critical of Israel as this war has continued.
And they get fierce criticism for this standpoint of view from the CDU, from the conservatives, who say you are anti-Israel, mm-hmm. that leads to anti-Semitism somehow, and that's why parts of the union or of the conservatives say we cannot work with the left party, the far left party in the parliament whatsoever because of this.
Yeah, so we're going to get back to that kind of dynamics of parties working with each other later on, but I want to move on to one more kind of policy area and kind of migration, asylum, anti-racism. A lot of these are really kind of core issues for them. And let's listen to one more clip, Matt, from your interview with one of the party leaders, Ina Schwertner, where she talks about migration and she says that migration in itself is not the problem. So let's listen to that.
We need more money to actually find places for migrants. And so migration is not a problem per se, but we see the problems, but we need to attack them, you know, by its roots and take them by the roots and not attack the people, but the causes of the problems.
So, I mean, they're really the most pro-migration party in the German political scene right now, Matt. Is that what you would, how you would frame it?
Hi, I'm Kate Laycock, host of DW's weekly European current affairs programme, Inside Europe. Our correspondents were there when the Berlin Wall fell, when the Balkans Wars broke out, and when Britain voted to leave the European Union. Now the continent is changing again, and we're rising to the challenge, bringing you a combination of expert analysis and on-the-ground reporting. Join us every Thursday.
Yeah, they would definitely see themselves as kind of the defenders of this right to asylum, that people are fleeing their countries and that Germany has an obligation to grant them safe haven. And that, again, is something that in the election campaign was seen as something where they set themselves apart from the rest of the pack. Because even like the Green Party, which has also been very pro-asylum rights, was seen as kind of maybe kind of softening on that issue, especially when it came down to the issue of deporting failed asylum seekers here in Germany. And I think what's interesting is that they basically have taken this issue up, threatened to take legal action against the government, the new government, if their policies break asylum law. But they also see that as kind of like something that's being used as a culture war. That was something that came up time and again at the party conference, that they see it as an issue that's used to kind of divide the population. And they say, you know, actually, the mother of all problems in this country is not migration, as like the AFD would like to tell you, but actually it's inequality, and this is used to distract working class people from these issues.
Yeah, and
it seems to be that they also have a very radical approach here. Is this the only party in the parliament that says, in principle, we are for open borders, we don't want border controls like we have them now? The Greens supported this policies. We want everybody to come here to check his liability for protection or not. And the problem are not the people that are arriving. The problem might be the people that are here, traumatized, radicalized, and committing these atrocities. You have to deal with them here. You cannot just deport them. So it's very radical if you compare to other parties. And this is also a unique selling point. People buy that, obviously.
Yeah, and I mean, there are some quite stark statements in the party program, for instance, saying that the Left Party is against deportations per se, and that even people convicted of criminal offences who are not German nationals should not be deported. They should be dealt with in the German justice system.
Just and finally on that, one of the things that they want to do is scrap Frontex, the European agency which defends Europe's borders. And you know all about this, but I think that's quite a strong statement to put in your platform and say we want to replace it with a civilian force, which is highly controversial. You know, the idea that you would have civilian groups basically rescuing refugees is totally kind of off the... is a no-go for the centre-right and the right in this country.
Yeah. OK, so let's take this together. So we've got a picture of their party programme. Who are they appealing to with this? So we heard at the beginning that Ines Vetna said that they want to be a party of the workers that's an alternative to the AFD. A lot of these political positions that they have are pretty much opposite of the AFD, especially on migration. I mean, on migration, for the Left Party, the AFD is racist, and for the AFD, the Left Party is...
far-left extremist.
Is extreme, So does this party really have any chance, do you think, Bernd, of, say, attracting voters who might be considering the AFD to consider instead the Left Party?
Well, if they want to attract workers, like Mrs. Spetner said, then you have to ask, who are the workers, actually? If you look at the statistics, only 10 to 15% of all employees or people that are working in Germany are actually workers in that definition. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the numbers also, the Linke is not attracting workers right now. It's more young people, educated people, not in the factories. These people are voting for the AFD. And so the question is, can you attract these people to come to the left if you have this radical migration policies? Mm-hmm. The economic policies might be fine with them, mm-hmm. but migration policies are, I think, not that would attract these workers. So in general, it's very astounding that they are able to attract all these young people. They have doubled the numbers in comparison to the last election for parliament in 2021. So maybe this is the path they want to go down to attract even more of them. And the number of members is rising. They doubled the membership in just 1 year. It's very astounding also. But workers cannot be the aim because there are no workers in this classical socialist definition.
So, and but there are some striking figures, aren't there? So, for instance, they were the number one party among first-time voters in the recent election, 27% of first-time voters. Yeah,
and they did well, very well, obviously, with young people. They were the number one party with 18 to 24. And I mean, you touched on this earlier, you know, people that obviously haven't really yet amassed income and wealth are more likely to be pro-high taxation. I think that Bernd has made a really important point about this idea that you can do well among young people, especially strong among young women who live in cities, whereas like old men who live in the countryside do really well with the centre-right Conservative Party. So there's a contrast there. But this issue of migration, if that continues to be as important an issue when people are asked about it in the coming years, it's hard to see how a party that's on the left that is so pro-migration that is telling people, you can come here and refugees can work on day one, then that they do well with workers. Mm. I don't see how that works. But then maybe if the debate shifts.
And just to look again before we move on to where they're getting supporters from, I think what's interesting also in the numbers is the signals that they're getting a lot of people to come over from the Green Party.
Yeah.
So why are Greens going to the Left Party?
I think they've probably the one issue would be migration, because the Green Party was seen as Well, there was this issue basically after the recent high-profile attacks in Germany, and then there was this clamour to start deporting people who with criminal records to Afghanistan, Syria, and it was an issue where the Green Party was divided, and the Green Party ultimately said we're for this, and that I think damaged their reputation among their base, and the young people in the Greens then decided they were going to go to the Left Party. That maybe combined with the Middle East and this idea that the Green Party wasn't being kind of critical enough of the Israeli government, I think those two issues.
Yeah.
And but again, this is like educated people who live in cities. This is not workers.
Yeah. And maybe for some on the left side of the Green Party, the party also has to become too belligerent in the last years. And
It's supporting NATO, it's supporting
the Ukraine war, it's supporting weapons deliveries. And some people don't like that on the Green side, because also the core or the roots of the Green Party also lie in the peace movement, in the anti-nuclear movement. So there are still some lefties left on the Green side also.
Yes, and we did an episode about the Greens couple of months ago, I think, where we kind of talked about that, that they went from a peace movement to being kind of some of the biggest hawks in the German political scene. Okay, let's go into some history now. Bernd, I want to turn to you as Mr. History, So we're going to talk about where this party came from. So it's called the Left Party. You mentioned earlier, Die Linke in German. This party can trace its roots basically to the communist party that ran East Germany. Like, tell me a little bit of the story of how this party emerged from that.
Well, I'm old enough. I saw the Socialist Party in the former GDR, in the communist dictatorship on German grounds, in action, actually, when it happened. And the former SED, it was called, the Communist Party, turned into this party of democratic socialism, right?
PDS.
Right after the fall of the wall and the demise of the GDR, of the German Democratic Republic, when the communist regime fell. So they thought they are the heirs of this system, and they also acted like that. They took over, for example, the money from the party. There was a long dispute until they actually said, we don't want that money anymore. And in the 90s, this party was also an organization that defended the rights and the approach of the former party members of the former socialist regime. So it took them a long way to get rid of this inheritance. There's still a communist platform and also a Marxist forum in the Left Party of today, which is a kind of looking back and shedding some tears about the fall of socialism in Europe. They are still there, these people, but they are dying off, of course, of biology. And then the PDS developed more. They have a fusion with the left parties from the former West Germany. So they formed this new Left Party. Then the name Die Linke came up.
And this and also
these people are coming also from the left of the Social Democrats.
Yeah.
So it's it's a mix now from West and East.
So, just to quickly, so you had people defecting out of the Social Democratic Party, so the main old kind of historical center-left party in German politics. When Gerhard Schröder, former chancellor, was in charge, there was a defection of some of the leading figures, including one particular finance minister, right? Oscar Lafontaine.
Yeah, he was a former boss of the Social Democrats.
Yeah.
Actually, he was the party leader, and he defected. And the dispute within the Linke Party never went away. There was always this dispute between the hardcore communists and the more realistic left-leaning politician that wanted to achieve something. And this also led to another split just last year, when Sarah Wagenknecht, a hardline Marxist communist, took half of the party and formed a new group. And she is accidentally the wife of this Social Democrat, Oscar Lafontaine.
Okay.
So it's also a family affair somehow. Now the left has got rid of these old-fashioned communists or Marxists. So the hard core of this party is gone. And now they have the chance to form something new, maybe, or to come up with a new program to get more attractive.
So to bunch that together, so you had the East German communists became the SED, became the PDS, which then combined with parts of the Social Democrats to become Die Linke. And then there was a fragmentation of this thing called the BSW. We also did an episode on that a couple of months ago. incredible amount of just like all of this, you know, fragmentation. This peels off from that. That comes together with this. I mean, it just shows it. It is an example of just how kind of shifting the grounds of German kind of party politics are, Matt. I mean, you've kind of, you're a more recent arrival to Germany. I mean, coming from a different system, the UK, it must seem very kind of weird, all of this sort of shifting of all of these parties morphing into each other.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of almost like perennial infighting within the left is nothing new per se, but it's what's really interesting about the left party is that because of that split with last year, there was basically a consensus in Germany that the left party was dead.
Yeah.
That Sarah Wagenknecht would leave and she would do well, and that her party would end up in the parliament. And actually what happened was something else, right? So the left party managed to get into parliament, almost doubled its vote, and Sarah Wagenknecht, who'd split off, didn't manage to get into parliament. And I think part of the reason for that, among the issues that we've talked about, are the kind of the leaders of the party. So we heard from Ines Schwertner, who I interviewed, who's this young woman who won her seat here in Berlin in a really tough battle against the AfD in a working class district. We also have like Jan van Aken, who is this has been
the
kind
one
of,
who said who, billionaires shouldn't exist. Yeah,
who wears this tax the rich T-shirt when he was on TV stations. So it was just clear what the message was, and then they have Heidi Reichenick, who we will probably come to, who is the queen of TikTok. So that combination basically meant that there was a fresh face. There was like fresh faces and a sense of energy and youth in this party that has been associated with old fighting, and that's like that was kind of shed away.
I want to ask you, Bernd, about Jan van Aken, because he's an interesting guy. He used to be a biological weapons inspector.
Yeah, he's a trained biologist. He's even a doctor of biology. He used to work for the United Nations and also for many NGOs campaigning against biological weapons. So he has a long history of actually arguing, like the peace movement does, no arms, disarmament is the key for everything. He worked in international organizations. He also used to live in Tel Aviv for a couple of years. So he has a wider perspective. He was not only in Germany.
Yeah.
An interesting figure, but on the way he developed this hate against billionaires somehow, I don't know, maybe it's also rooted in his personal history. He comes from a modest background, a modest family, but he also gives up some of his salary, actually, that he earned for his political efforts. So he's not using so much money for his own personal wealth. Maybe this is also a root of his stance.
So, an interesting person, and with a biography like that, obviously somebody who can speak with some credibility about international affairs. And Matt, you've also done a profile on Heidi Reichenegg. She's a really interesting personality. You just said she's the queen of TikTok. We've got one TikTok from her. Yeah, we can just quickly play that just to get a feel. We'll play that in German and then I'll translate it for you afterwards. Yeah, so this is Heidi Reichenegg, one of the young leading figures in this party, on TikTok.
Was haben Friedrich Merz und die Deutsche Bahn gemeinsam? Selbst wenn man denkt, jetzt kann doch eigentlich nichts mehr schief gehen, schaffen sie beide es noch, das am Ende zu versauen.
Okay, so this is Heidi Reichenegg. So talking about Friedrich Merz, obviously the new German Chancellor, Conservative. So what do Friedrich Merz and Deutsche Bahn, the German railway system, what do they have in common? Well, even when you think that nothing more can go wrong, they still manage to screw it all up in the end. So, she's good at kind of pithy, like very TikTok-friendly kind of messages. She's got a very fresh way of communicating. And this also kind of brings out Friedrich Merz, the current chancellor, as a bit of a hate figure for this party.
Yeah, they are he is a hate figure for this party. It comes up time and again in the speeches and in the kind of TikTok videos that we've just seen. Heidi Reichenegg has become one of the most successful politicians on TikTok in this country over the recent years. And she's an interesting person because she talks really fast, which is great for TikTok, but terrible if you're trying to follow German and you're not a native. But I think what was really interesting with the issue that really propelled Heidi Reichenegg's TikTok into the kind of mainstream was this issue that took place, this incident, if you like, that took place during the election campaign, where Friedrich Merz, who was then just the leader of the CDU, hoping to become chancellor, put forward a motion in parliament, and he did so knowing that it would get the support of the AfD, the far-right AfD, and that's highly controversial in the parliament. And she then let rep in Parliament saying that she was going to be the bulwark of against the AfD and the comrades needed to go to the barricades to defend against this. And that clip of her then was seen millions and millions of times. And I think that is considered a kind of one of the reasons why they ended up doing well in the elections that took place weeks after. So she has become like a very important part of the party success and also their kind of ability to communicate their ideas in a way that connects with young audiences.
Yeah. So they managed to turn lots of the Instagram followers or TikTok followers into party members then. They joined the party because it's also very easy to just fill out an online form and then you're a member. So, but the question also for the party leadership is now, will these people actually stay and engage with politics, or are they just admiring Mrs. Reicheneck, who is a TikTok star? That's good. But will they really be there to work in the field actually to promote the policies of the Linke? That's still a question.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to our third part, because this is where the big twist in this story comes. Yeah, so we've just heard how the left party really doesn't like Friedrich Merz. He is seen as a very kind of conservative figure, the opposite of what they stand for. He's rich.
And he's a millionaire. Come on.
Yeah, so he's not a billionaire. We should stress that, but he's a wealthy man. Okay, so despite that, last week in Parliament, the left party helped Friedrich Merz become chancellor. Explain what happened, Matt, because this is a party that is like stands kind of for everything that Merz is against, and yet they, in a crucial crisis situation, helped him become chancellor. What happened? Walk us through it a little.
So Friedrich Merz was supposed to be crowned chancellor at 10 a.m. and as we now know, he lost that first vote.
So this is a vote in the parliament. So basically, a new chancellor has to get elected by parliament. They're not directly elected by the people, but basically, you are elected by parliament. And he failed.
Yeah, he basically, his coalition, which is the Christian Democrats and the Social Democrats, had a 12-seat majority. So literally no room for error. And as we realised, there wasn't, because 18 of the members on that coalition didn't vote for him. He failed at the first hurdle. And then chaos ensued, where I was sitting in the presidential palace waiting for him, and then everyone was thinking, well, I don't know when he's going to come, if he's going to come today, tomorrow, when does it happen? And basically what then transpired was that they needed, in order to push through a second vote on that day, they needed two-thirds of parliamentarians to agree to change the protocol, the running order of the day, and allow for a second vote to take place. So they start scanning around to see who they might accept help from. And for the Social Democrats, it was an absolute no-no that you then go to the AfD and say, hey, would you back this? Because that's just they are resolute that they will not vote on anything that requires the AfD's vote. So they needed the left party. So then you had a situation where senior conservatives were trying to figure out how to reach the left party because they have got nothing to do with them. So they didn't have the numbers.
You can they go didn't over even there. Have their phone number.
No, didn't have their phone numbers. And so then it transpired that actually one of them did have a kind of former leader. So they got through to the former leader and then got through to the leadership. And then the left party's posed with the dilemma. Do you help your arch nemesis become chancellor, or do you let him stew? And they decided to help him, because they'd said they'd had internal meetings that day, and people didn't want to give the far-right Alternative for Germany an opportunity to sow chaos. That was their argument. I think there was also an argument that ultimately they didn't want it to crash into their party meeting that was taking place later that week. So that was the argument that they've said in the camera to the media, that they didn't want it, but they wanted something in return.
And so, Ben, so they went along with this and they gave the support, and also the Green Party did as well, to have this two-thirds majority, so basically a procedural thing to then enable there to be another vote for Friedrich Merz to become chancellor. And then, of course, the Left Party, they didn't vote for him as chancellor, but they enabled this vote and he managed to get through and, he made it to becoming chancellor in that one day. But I mean, that might sound like, okay, it's all done and dusted, but I mean, that could have staved off, that could have become a huge crisis for Merz, yeah? If there'd been no vote that day, if it had dragged on for days, who knows what would have happened?
The fear was, if you wait another day, the next vote would have been possible on day two, actually. But if you voted for that, maybe then more people have second thoughts about voting for him or not. So they wanted to get it through quickly.
So his position could have crumbled.
Also, I mean, the schedule was already set. He was supposed to go to France and Poland for his first visits, and all that would not have happened, and that would be, shameful for the new chancellor to say, I cannot come because I was not elected in the first round. So, and that's why they reached out to the left. But now the left party, Die Linke, is also expecting some gratefulness, maybe some things that they can negotiate with the conservatives in the future, for example, about the rules, the new rules for the famous, infamous debt break, die Schuldenbremse, so that would allow Germany to make more or debt easier than take out loans easier than before. So this might be a point of negotiation in the coming year.
Yeah. So, and I mean, the left party, they did extract, so that there was a public thank you from one of the conservative leaders, which you could almost sort of hear the gnashing of the teeth like in the thank you. But as Bernd says, so the left party, this is probably not the only time that there will be this kind of cooperation between the conservatives and the left party, because you're going to need two-thirds majorities for more this year, right, Matt?
I mean, there's like, I think it's also just to remember that the Conservatives have a written stipulation in their rule book that they will not work with the Left Party. They see them as too toxic because of the history that you talked about. So it was kind of thinking, is this now an end to that incompatibility pact that you have, the Conservatives have? What did the Left Party get out of the Conservatives in order to help save Merz's bacon? And then in the end, as you say, like it was a public thank you was the price. And also, as you know, Ines Schwertner, the leader, said to me, you know, what we want is to be taken seriously and no longer to be denigrated. And so now the question is, so I said to them, so what does it mean now going forward? And there are things like that where the government, the new government, will need two-thirds in parliament, two-thirds of members to vote for things, and that's where things like judges on the Constitutional Court become...
Ben, you've been looking at that, the judge situation.
You also have to add that the firewall to the far left is not as high as to the far right when it comes to the Conservatives.
Yeah.
They're already working with them. For example, in Thuringia, in one of the states, the left is tolerating a conservative prime minister, a state minister there, so they're still, you know, somehow bending the rules already, and it's not excluded that they will also vote for judges, which have to be selected over the next months, three judges for the Constitutional Court.
So that's the equivalent of the US Supreme Court. Constitutional Court, there are 16 judges in that. Three of them need to be appointed this year. So the government will need the left party too for that.
If they don't want to rely on votes from the far right, then they need the left to get to this two-third supermajority. So they have to somehow approach them and negotiate with them whatever deal to get these votes. The Bundestag can suggest these three judges. They are not appointed by a president or something like in the US. There's a real vote going on there, but it was customary that these votes always go through, but now we will see if that happens.
And I just want to kind of wrap things up now, because I want to get back to what you said there, firewalls, because what you described, Matt, that the Conservatives have this rule that they won't cooperate with the Left Party, which is obviously kind of dissolving in front of our eyes. They also have a rule that they won't cooperate with the AfD on the far right. To what extent does this cooperation with the left party, I mean, the CDU, I mean, the Conservatives, they're a centre-right party, so they're reaching way across the political aisle to cooperate with the left party. How much do you expect this to kind of fire up a debate in the next few years about whether the Conservatives should actually think, OK, let's be pragmatic, let's start working with the AfD?
To work with the AfD, I think what you will have is that the more that the Conservatives rely on the left party in Parliament to get things done, whether that's judges, or maybe not judges, but if they reform the debt break, i.e. if they make it easier for Germany to borrow huge amounts of money, you can be sure that the AfD will say, look at this Conservative Chancellor betraying the conservative values of his party and betraying his promises by working with the left party, the extremists on the left. And that will be something that many people on the conservative benches might well agree with.
Yeah.
And so therefore, then there'll be the question, hey, wait a minute, as you say, if you can work with the left party, why can we not work with the AFD? They share more of our platform when it comes to things like migration, when it comes to things like defence, taxation. So it might start off then that you have kind of that more questions and more of a debate emerge in the Conservatives, and that will become an issue with on a statewide level. So yeah. When you have like state elections, so next year there's several, and that's where people will say, okay, if the only option is a Conservative AFD coalition at the state level, then maybe we should do it. And that debate will grow louder, I think.
So what's been unleashed here around the left party could be hugely important for the direction in German politics altogether, Bernd.
Yeah, in the future there will be other twists and turns in the composition of the left party, I guess. They will also, not everybody in the party is actually happy about working with the Conservatives. But on the other hand, if you look at the poll numbers, the left has now 10%. The Social Democrats have only 16%. So maybe it's not included in the future that they will, you know, join forces again and become a left or a social democratic left party some way ahead. So to make a distinction between the far right and the far left. So maybe the left will rejoin again.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so out of all of that, fragmentation, there's probably much more to come. Okay, let's wrap it up now. I think, really a party to watch in the months and years ahead. So with all that attention on the AfD, don't ignore the opposite end of the political spectrum. Thanks for listening, being with us, watching on YouTube. Do leave us a comment if you're watching on YouTube, and do of course sign up if you haven't yet already to our Berlin Briefing newsletter on dw.com. You can find that there, and that's a great roundup of what's been going on in the given week here in Germany. But for now, thanks Bernd, thanks Matt, thanks for listening, thanks for watching. See you next time.